So last week, we had introduced the 14th chapter, which is the chapter related to the gunas, or the qualities of the mind, called Gunakarma Vibhag Yoga. So the knowledge of the guna, guna traya vibhaga yoga, that is the name of the 14th chapter, the three gunas, how they can be divided. How can we distinguish between sattva and rajas and tamas? Sattva being purity, rajas being passion or activity, and tamas meaning darkness or ignorance. How we can distinguish between these three gunas? How we can turn ourselves from tamas, which is ignorance, where we are, or a lot of us are maybe in rajas, where we are doing too much. So from ignorance and from activity, how can I turn my mind towards quietude? Quietude does not mean I stop working, but while I am working, my mind remains peaceful and quiet. So that is the goal of spiritual study. And this chapter will make it very clear to us. What are the three qualities? How each quality distinguishes from the other? How do people work when they are under the influence of tamas, rajas, and sattva? And then how one can turn one's attention from tamas and rajas towards sattva. So today we are going to begin the first two verses we'll cover, which Krishna, I think, should have been in advertising. I think he would have done a very good job. Because throughout the Bhagavad Gita, he says, what am I going to tell you? And he glorifies, you know, I am going to, like an advertising agent, you know, now this new movie is coming and how they promote it. Krishna is advertiser par excellence. So how he promotes this 14th chapter, why we should study the 14th chapter and what is the glory of this chapter, we shall discuss today. And then next week we'll actually go into the heart of the chapter as to how the world came into creation. So the first verse of the 14th chapter, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Param Bhuyah Pravakshyami, Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam, Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam, Yajnatva Munayah Sarve, Yajnatva Munayah Sarve, Param Siddhimito Gataha. So the 14th chapter, Bhagavan, Shri Bhagavan Uvach. So the Lord himself spoke. He said, Param Bhuya Pravakshyami. He says Param. Param means this highest. Highest Bhuyam, again Pravakshyami. Vakshyami means I shall speak. It is the future tense. Pravakshyami means Prakarshena Vakshyami. In Sanskrit, when they put the prefix pra, it means I will tell it to you most clearly, and pra means it is the higher. It is very clearly I will explain to you. It's not a casual, you know, this Gita cannot be read like a Earl Stanley Gardner or a Perry Mason or you know, not watched like a Bollywood or a Hollywood movie. It has to be studied seriously because it is serious information. Shri Krishna is telling us, Param Bhuya Pravakshyami. What am I going to tell you? Krishna says, Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam. Among the knowledges, it is the Uttamam. It is the highest knowledge among all the knowledges. Why? Why should I tell you? And Arjuna will say, why should I waste my time, you know, listening from you? What am I going to benefit from that? Even if all of you are here, like I asked one of the youngsters, why don't you come to the Gita class? He says, Uncle, you don't know. There is a Stanford game going on right now. So maybe there could be something else on TV that could be more interesting, but you are all here. What is the reason? So Krishna says, Yad Jnatva Munaya Sarve. Munaya means the munis. Munis does not mean somebody with a long beard sitting with orange clothes in the Himalayas. Munini means mananashilavan. So whoever is contemplative student, whoever listens to these words of the Lord and contemplates upon it, thinks upon it, and then applies that in his life or her life, is called a muni. So knowing which, all contemplative people, contemplating students, survey param siddhim ita gataha. Ita means after this refers to after this life. Param siddhim, the highest siddhi, the highest accomplishment, gataha, they have reached. So knowing this knowledge, you and I, even though we may not be at the level of the muni, but at least if we think about it and apply, we also can reach the same param siddhi that was reached by Swami Chinmayananda, Shankaracharya, Buddha, Lord Jesus, all these great prophets. The goal that they reached, the siddhi that they accomplished, you and I also can accomplish by studying the Bhagavad Gita. This verse actually needs a lot of, when I started, 14 chapter easy hai, kuch nahi hai isme. It's very simple. But the more you think about it, the more you, it's like ideas just keep coming. You know, and I try to listen to two or three different authors before I prepare for this class. I get the material and there is so much, every verse has so much to speak. It's marvelous. It's beautiful. So we shall study these few points. So first is with param and the param siddhim. So what is this para? Para and apara. These are the two words that are used a lot in our Upanishads. He says, param bhuya pravakshyami. I shall tell you the highest. Para is the highest and apara is not the highest, means the lower. If you look, read the Mundak Upanishad, it is covered in great detail. What is this higher knowledge and what is the lower knowledge? In Chandogya Upanishad also, the father, when he is giving the knowledge to his son, Shweta Ketu, he also tells him about para and apara. So para is the higher knowledge and apara is the lower knowledge. Why do we say higher and lower? Because when we think of higher, it is always something superior, like you say the high command, you know, or the like the prime minister or the president, you say he's above the cabinet, he's the highest official in the land. So the higher means something superior. Like that's why when we say, oh Lord, we always turn upward. Oh Lord, please bless me, please thank me, you know, we thank him. Even though the Lord is everywhere, he's in the glass, he's even down there, but I don't say, oh Lord, you know, don't look down. Why? Because in our heart, in our mind, the Lord is the highest. So this knowledge is called para in the Upanishads because it tells us about the higher, tells us about the Lord. That is number one. Number two, it tells me about my higher nature. Because as we have studied in this chart, I think myself to be this limited ego, this body, mind and intellect. As a perceiver, feeler and thinker, I see the world of objects, emotions and thoughts. So perceiver, feeler, thinker is my lower nature. My lower nature is this ego, what they call as ego. And om or the consciousness represents my higher nature. So I have two, as if two personalities. One is the lower personality, which at this moment all of us are. We are in the state of ego, in the state of ignorance. But when we wake up to that higher state, then we become one with the Lord himself. And that is the state of sainthood. If you look at the saints, when you sit in their presence, you feel that the Lord himself is, or herself, you know, is. This reminds me about that. There was this, you know, the Pope, and he passed away, and he went to heaven, and he said, I've lived my life such good and all, so I'm sure everything is going well, and I'm sure I'll be welcomed in heaven. And so Saint Peter meets him, Father, welcome. He says, Father, you have committed a grave sin. He said, grave sin? What grave sin have I committed? You did not admit women to the priesthood. You did not make them priests. So that is a grave sin. So he said, is God unhappy? They said, yeah, she is very unhappy. because we always think of God as he, but God is neither he nor she. That's why here we have male and female, mother, goddess, and God. Because the God or the consciousness is the infinite Brahman. That's why in Sanskrit it is referred to as Brahman. Brahman is the neutral gender. It is neither male nor female. It is the energy or the consciousness. So this, my lower nature and my higher nature, that's why he says, I am going to tell you about your higher nature. Bhuyah pravakshyami. I shall tell you again. Why do we have to tell you again? You say, I already heard it. You told me in the 7th chapter. You told me in the 8th. You told me in the 9th. Told me in the 13th. Why are you repeating it? Why? Because we forget. Now, we just finished the 13th chapter. But if I ask you, what was in the 13th chapter? Most, even I myself don't remember that much. I'm sure all of you probably have forgotten. You know, even we just finished it 2 weeks ago. Or forget about 8th or 9th. 8th or 9th to dur ki baat hai. That was done 6 months ago. So we need it again and again. And repetition is the only way to remember. Like you give a child a math problem. You know, you teach them multiplication tables. You know, 5 times 7, 35. 6 times 7, 42. 7 times 9, 63. And then they give him 2-3 pages and he has to do all of them before he comes to. And he says, I have so much homework. Why do they keep making us repeat the multiplication tables? I've already learned them. Yes, he has learned them. But unless he repeats, he'll forget. And that is the same with everything like algebra or chemistry. What we had studied, you know, we forget. Why? Because we have not touched that ever since we left 9th grade or 12th grade or college. So this spiritual knowledge needs to be again and again and again and again repeated. Why is that? Because we have so many lifetimes of ignorance. These vasanas, these deep-seated tendencies are like deep layers of dirt which have covered our mind and our intellect, and we are blinded. Blinded means we see the world, but we are blind to our true nature. So this ignorance is not that easy to wipe out. We sit in the Gita class or we listen to Swamiji and everything is so clear. And then you go out of here and then your husband says something or wife says something or boss or neighbor or child. Immediately your mind gets disturbed and you get angry and you get upset. And all that knowledge seems to be washed away. It's not meant to be despair or a pessimism. It just tells us that everybody has to have this again and again. And that's why every time, you know, people say, Bahut sun liya Swamiji ko. I have heard enough. I don't need to hear anymore. Swamiji say, you need to hear till the day you die. Because the human mind is so fickle. It is so very easily that immediately, the moment some sorrow comes or some problem comes, immediately the mind forgets. So the mind needs to be again and again reminded. That's only way the knowledge becomes firm. And it's like, you know, it's like making a groove, like Grand Canyon. You know, we have talked about that. The Colorado River, over billions of years, started from the top and then the drop goes and water goes. Now it is a canyon, 10 miles deep or something. So similarly, in our mind, we have to make these deep spiritual vasanas. But right now, our mind has only material vasanas. All I can think of is, you know, my family, my world, my money, my children, my power, my this, my that. But my Lord, how often do you think of Him? How often do you think of God? And that is why this knowledge has to be repeated, so that you again and again are reminded of this spiritual truth. So that's why he says repetition is necessary, because the moment sorrows come, that's when this knowledge is useful. This knowledge is very useful. And it's like a pillar that you can hold on to. And that's why repetition is very necessary. And he says, Jnana nam jnanam uttamam. Why is this knowledge supreme? You know, because the knowledge of the 14th chapter, Swamiji also says in his commentary, he says the 14th chapter does not talk that much about Brahman or the highest. You know, it talks about the world, how I should deal with people, how I should deal with my family, with my children, with my spouse, with my parents, how I should deal with my boss, with my neighbor, all those, you know, how I should deal with worldly problems, with health and ill health and economy going down and all those loss of job, how I should deal. So the 14th chapter deals with that. Then why do they say it is the highest knowledge? As we have studied before, chapter 7, 8, 9 are the ones that are clearly delineated and giving the knowledge of the Upanishads, which is the highest knowledge of who is Brahman and who am I and what is my relationship with Brahman. So if that is the highest knowledge, why is Krishna calling this the highest knowledge? So Gurudev says, because this knowledge is the basis on which you can grow your other knowledge. If you suddenly start saying, I am that consciousness, I am Brahman, and you walk around chanting that, it's okay, but unless you have purified your mind, unless you have reduced your negative vasanas, the knowledge will not stay. So this 14th chapter helps us to purify our mind, to get the mind ready for spiritual knowledge. So it is the foundation on which spiritual knowledge is based. Like you see a beautiful building, all we see is the building, a beautiful building. But very few people look at the foundation, that how strong is the foundation. If this foundation was not there, the building would collapse. So this knowledge of the 14th chapter lays the foundation for us to evolve spiritually. That's why after 14th comes the 15th chapter, which is the one of the best chapters, the most mystical chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So why? Because the Lord has already laid the foundation. So that is one reason why it is called Jnananam Jnanamuttamam. The second reason why it is called that, why is this knowledge the highest? You know, I need to study medicine, or I need to study law or engineering or accounting or business. You know, those are my fields. Why is this knowledge necessary? So Swami Chinmayananda says that the knowledge of physics or chemistry or biology or botany or zoology or all of those are only available to us if I'm alive, right? If I am conscious, if I'm alive, then only I can study physics or chemistry or cooking or gardening. Whatever I am studying is only available if I am alive. If I am not alive, if I am not living, then an Einstein who is dead, he cannot even do 2 plus 2, 4. So, what is the life, what is the consciousness in me? That is what this knowledge tells us. So, that's why the spiritual knowledge is called Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam, because in the presence of this knowledge, only all other knowledges can take place. That's why when we do the aarti, you know, natatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam, nema vidyuto bhanti kutoyam agnihi, tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam, tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati, tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam. So when that consciousness shines, anubhati, everything else follows. So every other knowledge follows after the knowledge of consciousness. If I am not conscious, I cannot study anything. So that's why this knowledge tells me who am I, what is that my true nature, that consciousness. That's why he says, Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam. It is the knowledge of who I am, and it helps in the spiritual growth. Then it says, Yad Jnatva Munaya Sarve Param Siddhim Ita Gataha. He says, knowing which Munaya Sarve, the contemplative students, Jnatva. Now, what is the meaning of Jnatva? Jnatva, we always think of knowing. You know, I read it. That's good. Once you have read, that is wonderful. But it's not only knowing, it is also experiencing. One is intellectually. Okay, we have studied the Bhagavad Gita. Like Swamiji, somebody told Swami Chinmayananda, I have gone through the Bhagavad Gita 3 times. So Swamiji said, that's good. You went through the Bhagavad Gita 3 times, but has the Bhagavad Gita gone through you? See, such a profound statement. You know, I say, I know the Bhagavad Gita, but until the Bhagavad Gita becomes part of your daily life, that how should I live my life according to the Gita or according to the Bible or according to the Guru Granth Sahib, whatever scripture you believe in, my life has to be modeled after the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Then only you can say, until then, you are just living the life. You know, you are living the life, going through all kinds of imperfections, going through all kinds of sorrows. Unless you can purify your life, unless you can improve your life according to the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, until then you cannot say, I know the Bhagavad Gita. You may be able to chant all the 700 verses one after the other. You may know the meaning. You may be able to give talks even. But until you have become the Bhagavad Gita, unless you have become. And that is why they always say that, purify your life, live your life. There's a very beautiful bhajan, you know, bheeni bheeni re chadariya, you know, meli chadar odke kaise tum. So we all came with this pure body. You know, he says, no das mas bunan ko lage, in that beautiful bhajan. He says this body was made by 9 or 10 months. And this chadar, they call it a chadar or a sheet. Just as the sheet covers an individual, so this body is a sheet that's covering the consciousness, this body, mind and intellect. Now it was pure when we came. I mean, we had some pre-existing vasanas, but a child, his mind is pure and body is also pure. But over the lifetime, we accumulate so many negativities, so many, you know, wrong habits and wrong tendencies. That's why they say, Mali Kardini Chadariya. You know, you had this beautiful, clean body and mind, and you made it impure. Why? With your negative thoughts, with your negative actions. And then he says, Das Kabir ne jo ki tyo kardini chadariya. But a saint who has purified, for him this body and this mind is so pure, it's like pure white. There is not even a blemish. So he says that should be the goal of your life, to purify your body, your mind, your intellect. And then you can go back to the Lord and say, okay, Lord, the way you sent me, I have gone back to you. There is a very, very beautiful song. I know those of you who understand Hindi, what I try is that, of course, bhajans are good to listen, but if you find some very nice love song that you really like, transfer it to the Lord and say, you know, it could be any, it could be English, it could be a popular Bollywood song. But if it is a pure love for the beloved, just transfer it to love for God. And so this beautiful song, I would request everyone to download that, listen to it on YouTube. It's called Ae Mere Pyare Vatan. It's a very old song from Kabuliwala, sung by Manna Day. And here, of course, there is this Afghan fellow who's singing about his country that he has left behind. So I think of that as this my pure state of consciousness that I have left behind. You know, I have gone far away. He says in that, in the third verse, he says, bahut dur reh gaya wo. You know, that my world is so far back, I have left it. And we have all done the same thing. We were all actually very pure. We are all actually that pure infinite consciousness. But we have gone away from that. We have got lost in the world. And that's what he says in this song. He says, you know, I constantly remember and I get sad because I miss my world. So listen to this song with attention and transfer it to that my pure state of consciousness. It's called Ae Mere Pyare Vatan. Recently I have been listening and then I kind of think about it and it really helps. So he says, knowing this, bringing this into the life, you go back to your original state. In that song he says, I wish at the time of death I go back, usi place. And that's what the goal of spirituality should be, that I should go to that original state, knowing which, experiencing which, param siddhim ita gataha. It says such a person has accomplished everything that needs to be accomplished. They say there is nothing more to be done. We are actually in the Thursday evening also. We are talking about this Thursday. We talked about doing. And we feel that I need to do this and I need to do that. And I have so much work in the house. You know, they say a woman's work is never done. And then I have so many emails to answer. And I have so many phone calls. And I have, But why do we work? Why do we work? You know, if you ask people, I work for two reasons. Sukha prapti, dukha nivritti. Either to get joy or to escape from sorrow. That is the only reason you work. I work, okay, by getting this, I'll get more money, I'll get more success. Okay, I'll get joy. Or if I don't do this, my boss will be unhappy. You know, so that sorrow I want to avoid. Or if I don't clean my house, then my house will be filthy. And then what will people say? So those are the only two reasons why we work. Sukha prapti, dukha nivritti. That's said in the scriptures. I didn't make that up. So you and I work out of incompleteness. That by getting this particular object, I'll be complete. If I only can get a new BMW, you know. Or if I only get a new house. Or if I can only get, you know, this diamond. Or if I can only... This, or if I can get this person, or I can, you know, or, so we think of things. But one who has experienced the highest, who has become one with the truth, there is nothing more to be accomplished, because you and I work out of incompleteness, that by doing this, I'll become complete. But a pure saint, a realized Mahatma, he works not out of incompleteness, but he works out of completeness. You and I work out of incompleteness, that by getting this, I'll become complete. But he or she has already accomplished that completeness and they want to share it with us. So their work is out of love, out of completeness. Mirabai, you know, her, look at her bhajan. Such beautiful, beautiful sentiments are there in that. Why? Because she's complete. She says, I found Krishna. And now her whole life becomes a life of sharing, of giving. And she has thousands of bhajans have been composed by her. All these great scriptures that were composed by these great prophets. Why? Because they had accomplished that. They had reached that goal. And then they were sharing it with us so that we may also reach that same joyful state. In the end of the 15th chapter, Sri Krishna very beautifully says, Iti guhya tamam shastram idam uktam mayanaga etat budhva buddhiman syat krita krityascha bharata. He says, Iti guhya tamam shastram, in the 15th chapter, he says, this most secret shastram, knowledge. Now, why do they say secret? You know, they always say, this knowledge is very secret. And the pandits in India misuse that by saying that only we can listen to it, we can chant it, no other ordinary mortal is supposed to study it, it's not supposed to be chanted, except in Sanskrit, that also the chanting has to be perfect. If you make a mistake, you will go to hell. So by scaring the people, they held on to this knowledge. So this knowledge is for all. But why do they call it secret? Because we hear it from the teacher, and then when we go home, we forget. It still remains a secret. No matter how many times we hear it, it remains a secret. So what it means is that secret means you cannot study it on your own. You need a teacher like Swami Chinmayananda or some great Swamijis who have interpreted it. By yourself, you cannot study. You need a guru. That's number one. The second reason they call it a secret, because you study it and you go home and you still forget. It still remains a secret. So by repeated listening and by repeated contact with these Mahatmas, you can learn this knowledge. So he says, Iti guhya tamam shastram इदम उक्तम मयानग, श्री कृष्ण सेज दिस नॉलेज हैज बीन गिवन बाय मी, एतत बुद्ध्वा बुद्धिमान स्यात्। एंड वंस यू हैव नोन इट देन ओनली यू कैन बी कॉल्ड अ बुद्धिमान, देन ओनली बी यू कैन कॉल्ड बी कॉल्ड अ वाइज पर्सन। यू मे हैव 3 PhDs, यू मे हैव you know, maybe the head of the, you know, defense department, you may be the secretary of defense, you may be the CEO of Google, or you may be whatever, you may have accomplished, you may be able to know, speak 5 languages fluently. But until you study this knowledge, you remain ignorant. Oh, and you may be totally uneducated, but if you know this knowledge, then you are called Buddhiman, like Nisargadatt Maharaj, who was a great saint of Maharashtra, lived in Bombay. He was totally uneducated. He was a bidi maker. But once he had studied this knowledge, then he became such a buddhiman. If you read his book, I Am That, I actually have tried and I find it so difficult. Totally uneducated, illiterate bidi maker. But with that knowledge, the words that come out of his mouth are pure Vedanta, the highest knowledge. How does that happen? It's the Lord's grace flowing through them. So that is why he says, etat buddhva buddhiman syat krita krityascha bharata. O Arjuna, once you have studied this and once you have brought into this life, then you have accomplished everything. And we think accomplishment is, you know, to have $1 million in the bank and to have a big car in the driveway and have 3 successful kids who are doing very well in college. And yeah, all those things are good. We're not saying that you don't have to do that. But none of those accomplishments comes even close to the accomplishment of the wise person who has realized. So the only true accomplishment, the only reason, so make that clear in your mind. Again and again I say, that only reason I am here is to realize. Only reason I am here is to know God. That is the only purpose of life. Everything else is secondary. Whatever else you do, you may take care of your family, you may take care of your work and business, nothing wrong with that. But the reason you are on this earth, the reason you have been given the human body, the intellect, is to realize. Just make that your permanent goal. Oh Lord, that is my goal. From today onwards, I'm going to want you and you and you and you and you alone. Everything else will be secondary. Once you do that, then it will change your whole life. Then everything you will do for realization. Yes, you will do your daily activities, but you will do that as a service of the Lord. Slowly your direction of your life will change. Your mind will change. Your thinking will change. It will just completely change your life. So if nothing else, just take one line from all that what I have spoken, that from today onwards, my goal in life is realization. That's it. Nothing else is important for me. Everything else is secondary. You do that, then everything falls in life. Because see, from childhood, you and I have been conditioned to thinking that worldly success is the only thing. You know, you have to be very good. You have to be successful. You have to be number one. At a certain level, yes, it may be necessary. But now that you and I are now adult and grown up, we should understand that there is a higher purpose. And that is why he says, yad jnatva munaya sarve param siddhim ita gataha. They have reached the highest siddhi, the highest goal. And that is the goal of self-realization. And that's why this knowledge is very useful. Anybody wants to add or ask any questions? Or? Yeah. Right. No, we are not saying you should not enjoy your work. Nobody says that. In fact, you must enjoy your work. Otherwise, you won't. Yeah, you'll stop doing work. But you should not work out of incompleteness, that by doing that I will get joy. I am joy. I am joy. I am already that. So you work out as a duty. You can work as a duty, that it is my duty to serve the world, or you can work as a servant of the Lord, or you can work as I'm, you know, I have got so much from the Lord, so by my service I am. So whatever motive you are working, but it is out of completeness. So you should enjoy the work, especially if you do it as a service of the Lord, that the work becomes supremely joyful. So we are not saying that you shouldn't enjoy, like if you go to work and you're cooking and you made a dish that came out beautiful and everybody praised. You shouldn't say, oh, it's wrong to be happy. No, it's wrong. It's okay to be happy, but immediately you should say, thank you, Lord, for giving me the ability to cook. Instead of taking the praise that, oh, I am such a wonderful cook. And it could be anything. It could be a doctor. And a patient comes and says, doc, you know, you took care of me. I got well. And that fattens our ego. Oh, I am so good. You know, I am so wonderful. But immediately one has to say, Krishna Arpanamastu. Let me offer it to the Lord. Any praise you get, whatever work you do, do it as a service of the Lord and thank the Lord for whatever abilities he has given you. So you still work. And you still get joy, but then instead of making that joy to fatten your ego, you make that as transfer it to the Lord. And then it becomes even more joyful. Because when you get gratitude for God, then that the joy in your heart multiplies. And especially in our case, as physicians and all, we have a tendency to get overloaded, you know, with work. And we just keep taking it. So this year, thanks to knowledge from the Swamiji's, I made a conscious decision. I'll not take new consults in the hospital. I don't take any new. I only do outpatients, and any of my own patients that go to the hospital, I take. So it has cut down my load by about 30 or 40%. So I have extra time to study and meditate and prepare for these classes. Otherwise, if you're working from, 8 to 8, and then I have to go and sit down and prepare it, you cannot do a good job. So you have to decide what is important for you. And as I said, if your goal is spirituality, then automatically everything else will cut down. True. No, that's an excellent point. Thank you for bringing it up. That when you serve and when you give others, then you get more energy. And then that's true. And that is very true, that when you give, that's why even in the prayer of Saint Francis, it says, it is in giving that we receive. When you give, you get so much more back, not only from the individual, but from the Lord and from the totality. So yes, that is very true. That's a very good point. And that's also excellent, that as you give more, you get more emotional energy. But still, the time is limited. And if the work is pleasant, that is good. But if it's going to stress you, that's what I asked him. I didn't say that don't be on 5 boards. I said if you enjoy that, that's fine. But if you are getting stressed about it and you find that you don't have time for yourself, people say, oh, that is being selfish. It's not being selfish. It's not at all. Because only when you are complete, you can share with others. It's like a person wants to do a lot of charity, but if he's a beggar himself, he cannot do charities. He has to go out, earn, and be successful, and then he can give, like Bill Gates. You know, he gives billions every year. So similarly, for a person to share with others, he himself has to be spiritually complete. That's why these saints, they take time off, and they say, I'm going to, like Jesus took 14 years off and went into silence. You know, some people say he went to India, some people say he went to study. All these Mahatmas, look at Shankaracharya, Swami Chinmayananda, all of them, they took sannyas, they took vairagya, where 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, they were just reached that ultimate state of realization, then they could come out and share with the world. So one has to be first oneself complete before one can start sharing. That's what the idea is. So it's not being selfish, but only when I realize, then only I can become a soul. It's like a light. A person first has to have the light himself, then only he can share the light with others, whether it's a lamp or whether it's a bulb. The bulb says, I have to be lit first before I can light everybody else. So that is the point. But it's a very good, excellent. Thank you for bringing that.